Welcome to Beyond the Bullet Points, a podcast from Stoddard's Range and Guns, where Ken Bay explores the personalities, histories, and drive behind Stoddard's brands and the organizations it supports.
A few years ago, David Kramer lost a friend who served in special operations for the U.S. military. David was torn apart by the loss and wanted to do something about it. The Special Operations Care Fund was born. David and his fellow SOCF board members all have other jobs and careers, but they find time to raise money for those who serve our country and for their families. Sometimes it's a broken marriage that needs repair or a brain that needs care and healing. When Dad has perished, families are left with a void that is almost impossible to fill. Often, a family will face financial catastrophe. The children of those who have perished need nurturing and mentoring at camp. These are the instances where SOCF responds to fill in the gaps. Stoddard's has been a supporter of SOCF for the last few years. Recently, we donated our range and our team to help with a donor event. I sat down with David before the event to learn more about how he started SOCF, what it does, and where he would like it to go. I'm here with David Kramer.
Good morning.
Good morning. I know you were with Uber Group, and now you're with, with Magpul.
Right.
We're here today actually to talk about the Special Operations Care Fund.
Yes.
But tell me a little bit about your... First of all, thank you for doing this with
me.
I appreciate it. And tell me a little bit about your background with Uber Group and now with Magpul.
So I'm from Atlanta. I actually worked in the outdoor industry for years after high school. Worked at High Country here in Buckhead, initially at Perimeter Mall. And worked in on the outdoor side of the business at retail for 10 years. And then I left and became a manufacturer's rep. On the outdoor side of the business, and that's when I was one of the founders of a rep agency. We named it the Uber Group, but yeah, we were manufacturers reps, and then we had a portfolio of brands working primarily in the outdoor space, so guys going hiking and camping and climbing. I was in that world for a long time, very passionate outdoor person, and I got to engage the military first in 2004 at Fort Benning with the Rangers. And it was an interesting time. The outdoor industry, generally speaking, is a very relaxed industry. Everybody wears shorts and flip-flops in the summer and cargo pants and comfortable shoes in the winter and a flannel shirt. And here we are at this outdoor show, and these guys that do not fit the part show up. And they start asking about the products I was selling. And because the outdoor industry is a regional business, they say, oh, you're in North Carolina? Well, Dave's our rep in North Carolina. Or, oh, you're in Georgia or Florida or Tennessee, wherever these operational bases are that have a bunch of special operations guys. And that's how I got to engage the military, and that kind of started a very unique trajectory for a guy that's been climbing and skiing and paddling for most of my life.
So what brands do they connect with?
So the big brands at that time were Arc'teryx, Salomon Footwear, Suunto Watches, and Jetboil Stoves. That kind of portfolio were very unique to the guys in the special operations community. They had funding that a conventional force didn't have. They had flexibility to get items outside of the big government programs, and they were able to basically acquire things that were unavailable to a conventional force. And I would say Arc'teryx was probably the most intoxicating brand to those guys. It was and still is a very, very premium brand, kind of representative for a lot of those guys as the vacation they want to take, but they can wear it professionally at work. But we started selling a significant amount of Arc'teryx and Salomon Footwear to those special operations guys, and that kind of created its own unique business opportunity, and I managed that for those brands until last fall.
And did those brands help these guys?
So I was probably innocent or dumb enough to engage these guys because I knew nothing about their process, how they buy things. I was used to selling to accounts. So, you go to an outdoor store and they carry Arc'teryx. That was somehow or another I touched or managed that business, or my team did.
David explained how Arc'teryx designed a backpack for the Marine Corps and won a big contract with the military, its first foray into designing products for the military.
We were very much an outsider, but good product, or great product in that case, won the award, and we had the logistical piece of manufacturing on the States, or on the U.S. Island of Puerto Rico. We could run that. And then from there, it just kind of blossomed. And I was really, really smitten with these guys. They were a very unique group of individuals. I'm not a vet myself. It was really fun to talk with these guys and visit their bases and hear about what they do. And honestly, a lot of what, the same objective challenges to keep a mountaineer comfortable climbing a big peak in Alaska is the same objectives or the same challenges you have keeping a guy comfortable in the winter in Afghanistan. The difference is one guy is paying to be there and another guy is paid to be there, and he probably carries a lot more weight. And so Arc'teryx, we started building some very specific clothing for them. It was basically offshoots of what was commercially available at an outdoor store, a mountaineering coat with some very specific features. And then we started to paint them in colors that were more appropriate for deployment, including some camo patterns. And we were willing, we had the bandwidth to do these sorts of projects, and it grew into a fairly significant business. The nickname of that brand is called LEAF, Law Enforcement Armed Forces. So it's the Arc'teryx LEAF brand, and it's a in the grand scheme, it's a very small business compared to Arc'teryx worldwide, outfitting people to go into the mountains, but it's a pretty big number that they're managing still. It's a very, very good business.
And did you hear from any of these guys who were wearing that product?
Oh yeah. I mean, you sit at a trade show or you go to their base and they start showing you pictures of being on a mission or on a target or on the helicopter after they've done their mission. And they're showing you what they wore. And I mean, it still gives me chills to see these guys and they show you the photos of what they just got through, and then you start to realize that there's a significant difference. At least I felt there was a significant difference between outfitting a person for a vacation, an awesome vacation, but still it's a vacation, and acknowledging, hey, if the guy has to buy the green one because the black one's not available, doesn't ruin much. But when you are fulfilling a contract and you've promised these guys, hey, we're going to have 175 jackets to your unit by March 1st because you go wheels up, and that's the difference between not having a jacket for deployment or having it, you understand the responsibility. And it has more gravity and weight. And so you feel a sense of obligation to, hey, my tiny, tiny contribution to this effort is just getting the items that we said we'd get to them on time, in the right size, to the right facility, in the on the right base. So it's pretty cool.
Is that where the Special Operations Care Fund grew from?
So just like in any business, you start to get to know these guys, and you have dinner when you're visiting them. And I started to develop a really interesting relationship with a lot of these guys in the special operations world. And we before we had actually started SOC-F, a friend of mine in the industry, now a coworker of mine, sent me 300 PMAGs from Magpul, and you've seen my old office, fairly small space, and so 300 PMAGs took up a lot of real estate in my office. And a friend of mine in the SEAL teams died in a training accident, and he and I were fairly close, and I was pretty tore up by his passing. It was on Good Friday. And the next Monday, I was at my office, and I opened up the PMAGs, and I had a picture of him in a helicopter up on my wall, and he had taken his helmet off, and his hair was all crazy, and he had a humongous beard, and this is before they tightened up the grooming regulations, and I cut out the picture of his image, and I made a stencil, and then I painted it. And it took me all day to make 10 of them. And I definitely do not have a burgeoning career in art. I will assure you of that. It looked like a third grader did it. And so I took those 10 magazines to the memorial up in Virginia Beach. And I handed them to a friend. I had to catch a flight, head back to work. And I handed them to a friend, and I said, hey, you know, sell these. Call the bar to order, sell them, and give the money to his wife, Jenna. And 2.5 hours later, he calls me. We're taxiing back to the gate, and he says, hey, how much do you think those went for? And I thought, they probably went, you know, these are, what, $15 out on your floor and each. And so I thought, you know, with his image, pretty cool. You know, maybe they went for $100 a piece. So I said $1,000. He said higher. I said $1,500, higher. $2,500 higher, and that's when he just stopped me. He said, you know, we sold 5 of them for $15,000, and we had to cut it off because suddenly the family was like, what are these things? And they were really, you know, unique in a very basic, innocent sense. And at that point, I had 290 left at my office, and I thought, okay, well, I know what I'm doing with 290 PMAGs, and a lot of people in Atlanta came together to make it happen. I had a friend actually up in D.C. Digitize that artwork and made it into an Adobe Illustrator file, and then Advanced Armament was up in Gwinnett County, and they let us borrow their laser. Actually, they did all the work, and John Hollister and Mike Hoffman and that crew up at Advanced Armament Remington made the artwork happen. So we had 290 of those, and I had 3 dealers up in Virginia that sold those PMAGs for $100 a piece, and they went like that, and instantly we raised another $29,000, and we were able to give that money away to the family. And let's formalize something down here in Atlanta. I had a couple buddies that were equally as interested in helping these families out. And so we formalized a 501c3, well, first an LLC, then we applied for 501c3 status with the IRS, and we were off to the races. We filed in 2013, but we didn't actually get started until 2014. So, sorry, a little bit of a long story to how we got to B, but that's the backstory.
That's great. And you are 100% volunteer at this point?
Yes. So the board, we volunteer all of our time, and then we, at our events, we ask for volunteers. And most of that, honestly, is friends and family. My wife and the other board members' wives help significantly. And then just some friends in Atlanta are willing to give of their time and their talent and treasure and help make these events happen. So yeah, so we have no rent, no mortgage or debt service or any sort of overhead. We have insurance. We insure the organization and our events. And we obviously, when we can't get something donated, whether that's food or beverage, catering, or an event space, we pay for that. But otherwise, the things that I think people want to know is, you know, well, who's making money on this? The answer is no one. Okay, the caterer. But other than that, yeah, it's no one takes a dime from it. We're able to do it without any executive directors. We kind of send text around, hey, what do you think? We got a request for some money. What do you think? And very quickly we make those decisions and are able to fund these sorts of initiatives.
Who's on your board?
So the board initially was Griff Griffin, patent attorney here in Atlanta, in Midtown. Cannon Reynolds, who's an architect up in Buckhead. David Money, who is now retired attorney, but he lives half the year here and half the year out in Colorado. And myself, those were the four initial board members. And we actually just this week expanded out to add some additional board members. One is Kelly Rodriguez, who's a friend and also a spouse of a special operations guy. And she herself was a 20-year vet, just retired out of the Army and the 82nd Airborne at Fort Bragg. Kelly, her husband, Michael Rodriguez, Rod, who is a Special Forces Green Beret. He is now retired. Rod is going to cycle onto our board as well. And then another friend up in East Cobb, Suzanne Kelly, who used to work at CNN here. Suzanne runs a company called The Cipher Brief, which is at a very unique intersection between business and the intelligence community. And Suzanne is going to come on the board as well.
So you all have other jobs. This sounds like quite a significant commitment.
You know, it doesn't feel like it's much work, quite frankly. Probably because I get incredible satisfaction. I speak for the board. We all get significant satisfaction doing it. But for the most part, it's a handful of events a year, and it requires traditional planning, making sure we've got the facility, the invites sent out, the catering squared away, and any beverages, the nature of the event. This will be our big event up in April. It's the fifth time we've done it. So we have a very good kind of plug and play, you know, wash, rinse, repeat. We can kind of do it without a fair amount of legwork. It's getting less and less work every time we do it because it's just, you know, plugging in the details. So we're able to do it without any staff.
And what types of organizations does SOCF support?
So we have a number of places where we park the money. The first one is we help a lot of brain injury treatments. There are two types of treatment that are not currently funded by TRICARE or the VA. One is called hyperbaric oxygen therapy. It is if you have the bends or get the bends when you're scuba diving, that is how they treat it. And HBOT, as it's referred to, also has a significant healing aspect for hyperoxygenating the blood supply and in the brain. And because it's under FDA, looking at FDA approval, it's not quite yet covered. So we will cover that. So we fund HBOT. It's basically 40 treatments, or they call the treatments actually a dive. You're in this chamber, and it's 40 treatments over 30 days, and we fund that. And that's out of a 501c3 that we do it out of Fort Bragg and in Norfolk, where Virginia Beach, where the East Coast SEALs are. Then we also do one called MERT, it's Magnetic Electroresonance Therapy. So it's using an MRI machine to help map the brain waves and get the guy's brain to start to run pathways. And boy, I'm not a doctor, and so I barely even understand the science behind it. But MERT is incredibly useful, and we've seen places where HBOT may not have helped the person, but MERT is the right way to treat this. I have friends in that world of brain injury, and they've tried to explain it to me at the Crayola level, and I still don't even get how or why it works. But those two treatments are significantly expensive, but have incredible rates of helping people to heal. Anecdotally, and that's truly all this is, I had a friend of mine from Fort Bragg at the Army Special Operations organization there at Fort Bragg, and he was hit by a vehicle-borne IED in Iraq, and he was a horrific case. You have he's a Hulk of a man, and he could not. I mean, you would see people he's known for years, and he would look at them and he'd go, "Do I know you?" And you sit there and you go, 2 minutes ago, I just explained to you who I was and our connection to each other. And then he'd go, "Oh, but who are you again?" And you could visibly see he was not able to connect all these dots together. And he came to Atlanta, went to the Shepherd Center. Shepherd had a bunch of treatments for him, but they didn't think they could actually, what they offered could do much for him. He came to my house when he was at Shepherd. And the clinks of forks and spoons hitting the plate and putting a glass down on a table, that ambient noise was so agitating to him. He had to wear shooting earmuffs and sunglasses at my table. Now, granted, I had three loud children, but my wife said, "Hey, you know, he is visibly, you know, you got to get him into a dark room where there's quiet. Go sit him in the car in our carport and turn the lights off." So you watch this guy, and I see him 3 years later after HBOT, and I'm at Fort Bragg, and I'm out at his organization, and I'm walking, and I see this guy, and he's got this humongous Cheshire grin on his face, and I'm like, "I know this guy. Wait a minute, that's Mark. Holy smokes!" And gave him a big, huge hug, and he picked me off my feet, and I said, "Man, what happened? How are you?" He goes, "Dude, I got HBOT, and it saved my life, and it saved my marriage." And you're going, how can we not prove that this works? Because this man in front of me, you know, he is healed, and it's unbelievable. So yeah, so you see this, and you're just blown away at you know what it does. And so Rod, who's on our board, same thing. You know, Rod will straight up tell you, "Hey, not all lives are saved on the battlefield. You know, if it weren't for HBOT, I'm one of the 22. Like, I was there. I was ready. And it saved my life." And so it's awesome. So yeah, we love to write checks to fund those two brain injury initiatives. Beyond that, we have a Gold Star Kids program. And that has morphed into not only just Gold Star Kids, but then how to get the family to reconnect in a meaningful way. What they special operations families tell us is the family got used to dad being gone 250 nights a year. And when he came home, it was like a vacation. The problem was when dad left the military and now he's home 365 days a year, all sorts of problems started to show themselves, because suddenly dad is very present and it almost felt like a parasite in the family. And it was unique circumstances. And so the company that we pay to do the Gold Star Kids Camp also had this, what they call the Family Reconnections Camp. And that has blossomed into its own. And this is one of the most meaningful and wonderful initiatives that we fund, is to heal these families and these children who some of them don't have a dad anymore. So we fund that. And then we also have a big investment right now in continuing into 12-step programs for guys who have found solace in the bottle, or in a box of pills, and they get addicted to opioids, painkillers, or drinking, or both. And so we're sending guys to a very specialized treatment center for the military in Texas. We also have a program that we do when as needed. It's a marriage counseling program. The fine folks up at Windshape on Berry College's campus have made their facility available to us when we have a couple that's been identified by the chaplains at the organization and their leadership, and they say, "Hey, your failing marriage is affecting your work. We think we've got the right program." They do an interview with a service provider, LifeGate Counseling here in Atlanta. And LifeGate provides a 5-month counseling suite. They do it two different intensives where you go for about 72 hours up to Windshape, and then they do Skype once a week calls, and then they go back and do another marriage intensive. And so we fund that. And then we also have just an emergency fund, and we've paid for everything from people struggle to, usually it's a healthcare issue. And then maybe they've got even the deductible, the 20% they have to pay is still a staggering amount. I have a friend whose wife, post-retirement from the Navy after 20 years in the SEAL teams, she was diagnosed with cancer, and we've paid for a transport flight from Duke Medical Center to a girl who needed to go to Children's Healthcare in Cincinnati, and TRICARE was dragging their feet, and the clock was ticking, and from a single conversation on the phone, we said, hey, we'll pay for the flight, and no questions asked, never met this family in our lives, and we heard from vetted people that said, hey, this is the guy and his family. And so, yeah, so that's a long story, but that's what we do with the money. And those are the kind of the five places we put it. When we have money left over, we don't want to own cash. It doesn't help us or help anybody if we're not putting it to use. So we will find well-run 501c3s that maybe have a connection to a unit that we don't have. And so whether it's the Green Beret Foundation or the SEAL Foundation, or we've funded all sorts of different things. Some of those go more for education. Some of them, like us, just, hey, there's an emergent need, and they found out about it first, and so we can fund them, and they can vet those needs and get the money to the people that need it.
How much money has SOCAF raised?
This is our fourth year, we've raised $1.6 million. Last year, we raised and gave away $880,000. So it's basically started off with a small, then we doubled it, and then we doubled that again, and now here we are 4 years later. Last year, 2017, $880,000 and change. And we anticipate probably $1 million to $1.2 million this year. Since we don't have any expenses, we don't have a real need to, oh, we got to cover our costs. Money comes in, it goes out. So it's very, very easy in that sense because we don't have to worry about overhead.
So many would ask, why aren't these veterans receiving health and other benefits from the government?
So I wish I had a real logical answer for you. I don't. I will say this. As a guy that used to own a small business, and you can appreciate this, businesses in general are not meant to heal marriages or provide everything a family might need. And so I understand it. As a guy that, I had 13 employees at one point, there was definitely items I couldn't provide. I would want to, but I couldn't. And I can't imagine doing that for 2 million people all in, including the reserves and the National Guard. So I don't know. The cynic in me, can probably go on a long tear in that. I just choose to accept that, there are gaps in coverage, and those gaps to Congress might just look like very small gaps, but to the family who's about to fall into the abyss of financial ruin because a child is sick and they've done what any parent would do. They left the system to go find the best doctor to heal that child. And because they've done that, they've incurred expense. And so, hey, we can do for a number of families what we wish we could do for everyone. But yeah, wherever those gaps are, if it's for a special operations family, we will fill them so long as we have the financial resources to do so.
And I understand you also support vets who leave the military and go into contracting work, who still support our country in a big way.
Correct.
Guys like, I know many people are familiar with 13 Hours.
Yes.
Guys, the attack on the U.S. State Department Special Mission Compound. I know guys like Mark Geist and Chris Peranto,
yes,
are among the types of people who you support. Is that right?
That is true. And that falls under, after we've kind of managed our own internal initiatives, we support a couple of organizations who are there to support basically the intelligence community. When an Army Ranger or SEAL or a Green Beret, Special Forces Green Beret, if they leave the military or retire and they do go to work on contract, typically to the CIA or any of the 13 intelligence agencies, they are oftentimes a contractor, no different than any contractor who does the IT on your computer systems or whatever that looks like. And so those guys are contracting. They're given no benefits if they are injured. And so, yeah, you it is, again, one of those where the cynic in me could get very angry, the fact that I have friends who have retired as a master chief out of the Navy or a sergeant major out of the Army, and they go work for that those organizations, and they're injured, and then they can't go to Walter Reed. It's like, well, wait a minute. 6 months ago this happened while you were still an active duty Army guy or Navy guy. You'd be at Walter Reed, no questions asked, but you have honorably retired and been contracted by the government to do basically a similar, maybe the same job overseas, and now you're no longer, they won't even, you know, talk to you. Breaks your heart. So yeah, so we fund one called the Third Option Foundation, which is for the CIA's paramilitary organization.
And there are other organizations that support your organization.
Correct.
Who are some of those?
So we've had a number of folks here in Atlanta and elsewhere that have you know, basically said, hey, how do we help? How do we get involved? We've got this other fundraiser. So the Atlanta Charity Clays has been going on with a very generous group of Atlantans for, I want to say, 30 years at this point. And they typically find children's-oriented causes. So that might be, you know, helping out the Hugh Spaulding Center, Children's Healthcare, or the Boys and Girls Club. Well, some of those fine folks found out that we had a Gold Star Kids program, and hey, we're in Atlanta. And so we've been the beneficiaries from the generosity of the board of the Atlanta Charity Clays. We have some friends up in Nashville who have found the same sense that we have, a sense of purpose and giving. And they gifted us $100,000 to help with these initiatives that we're doing. Same thing in Chicago. We have a very generous husband and wife combo that saw what we were doing and said, hey, if you can do that, if you rednecks in the South can do that in Atlanta, we can crush you in Chicago. And they will probably beat us at our own game. Very generous folks, basically replicating what the Charity Clays and what SOCF has done with a Sporting Clays event.
One of the charitable events SOCF runs every year is a Sporting Clays event.
And so we run this very unique event, and it's really fun because it allows people to meet and greet. And I might not be very good with a shotgun, and the Army Ranger's not very good with a shotgun, and we both get schooled by a guy who's an accountant. And he has a fun time showing us some tricks of his trade, and he gets to hear the Ranger or the SEAL or the Special Forces guy talk, you know, about deployments, and it just creates this awesome venue to be able to meet people in a very unique way. But we've done, you know, traditional shooting events like we have done here, and those are fun as well. And that's always interesting when you have a retired special operations guy teaching guys like me how to shoot. It's really fun. You know, it's almost, you know, I use the metaphor, it's like learning how to golf with Phil Mickelson or, you know, Tiger Woods or, you know, whoever, Tom Watson. So it's really fun to play with those guys with guns.
Well, Stoddard's is proud to be absolutely part of that. We're
absolutely happy to
help. I asked David how he feels he helps special operations soldiers function in the business world after they returned from serving. He talked about how many skills they have that actually translate well to the business world. This is a theme we have heard from other organizations that we support, like your Grateful Nation, as well.
It's been fun to try and help these guys tailor the language that they use. If they're not going to go work for the federal government overseas anymore, and they want to come and have a normal American life, whatever that looks like for their normal, how to decipher that and make it into a meaningful resume builder. So when the guy looks at it, he's like, wow, you led a group of, you know, a company, 100 men. If that was a construction firm, that's a project manager. So yeah, being able to help those guys to tailor their language in a way that they also understand, hey, yeah, it's business and it's bureaucracy and it's private bureaucracy, which is different than government bureaucracy. It's always in the pursuit of profit. But you know, you can usually figure out what the guy's motivated by because he's here to make money. So yeah, it's definitely helped me to understand how to apply the skill sets out of 20 years of serving the country into working within an organization that's trying to improve and make profit.
What's your ultimate goal for SOCAF?
It's funny you ask that. My wife and I were talking about that the other day, and at what point, you know, maybe I step off the board and just go into, you know, just a normal role of a donor supporter. I think I would like to be there until we've raised and given away $10 million. I don't know why, it's an arbitrary number, but it seems big and it seems like that would make a lot of impact on a lot of people's lives. And so I think, you know, I'll hang around for till 10 million bucks and then I'll just be a supporter and, you know, let other people carry the torch for a while.
Well, we're proud to support the organization. I want to thank you for taking the time to do this with me today.
Yep. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks.
If you want to support SOCAF, you can do so at soc-f.org. This is Ken Bay. Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Bullet Points.